This is an interview with Carolyn Thornton in Durham, North Carolina. It is August 13th, and we are in her home. The interviewer is Geralyn Patterson, and this is part of the Spencer Grants Project on School Desegregation in the South, and we will be used as part of the Southern Oral History Program at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The tape number is 81304CT. Okay. Ms. Thornton, will you tell me a little bit about... tell me the dates that you attended Hillside.
Okay, I graduated from Hillside in June of 1953.
Okay.
So I was there from 49 to 53. And we celebrated our 50th graduation anniversary last year.
How was that?
Oh, it was dynamically fun. We had a big return of classmates to participate in the graduation exercises. The class of 2003 honored us, and the administration of the school honored the class of 53, and we sat as a group on the floor of the stadium at Duke, well, the gym.
Right.
And it was nice, and we had breakfast there after, and just had a lot of fun.
That sounds fun.
In fact, our class continues to meet every month.
Every month?
Every month. We meet the second Saturday of the month.
Okay.
In fact, we just had a committee meeting because we were planning a picnic.
Okay.
For September.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can tell from the fact that we stick together.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody in Durham who went to Hillside, but a core group of us. I guess there are about 15 of us who get together on a monthly basis for events and activities about Hillside.
Okay. I'd like to talk more about that.
Sure.
Because that's so different from my experience
mm-hmm.
in high school. I can name five people that I remember probably and stay in touch with
mm-hmm.
from my high school class. But I want to start with hearing some of your fondest memories about Hillside.
Well, our class of 53, was considered one of the brightest classes.
Okay.
We were mischievous as we could be, but we were all quite bright. National Honor Society members, Alpha Kappa Mu members, went to the National Student Council meeting in Evanston, Illinois. I was Hillside's first girl student council president.
I'm not
so
surprised.
So that was supposed to be a big shot. But we had fun. Everything we did with enthusiasm. Hillside in that era had the reputation of being probably the best high school in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
certainly the best black high
mm-hmm.
school. Many of the national meetings that I attended representing Hillside at the national level were integrated. And it was always interesting and fun. Here in the state of North Carolina, of course, we were separate but equal, quote, and did not particularly associate with white schools.
Mm-hmm.
But invariably, at the national level, I never will forget when we went out to Evanston, Illinois, Northwestern University, to the National Student Council meeting,
mm-hmm.
The black students from all over North Carolina got together. We went as a group. But we paired up with the white kids when we got to Illinois. I maintained friendship with a guy from Four Oaks, a white fellow from Four Oaks, North Carolina, through much of our college experiences, although back home we didn't dare do second associate. But Hillside, did everything we did big time.
Mm-hmm.
The band, I was in the band.
Were you?
Oh yeah.
Okay, I've heard a lot about
that. Hillside band was world renowned.
Okay.
Our band leader at the time was Shorty Hall. Mr. Fillmore Hall was his name.
Okay.
He was nicknamed Shorty Hall, who had taught Dizzy Gillespie and other famous musicians.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
At Laurinburg Institute. He came to Hillside after having served as band director at Laurinburg Institute, which is a private school in Laurinburg, North Carolina.
Okay.
So he brought a level of expectation, if you will,
mm-hmm.
as well as a level of experience and expertise
mm-hmm.
that he basically expected from his students.
Mm-hmm.
And he got it.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of people who were in the Hillside Band with me at that time who've gone on to be pretty famous. Grady Tate, who comes here every year for the Jazz
mm-hmm.
Festival, is a graduate of Hillside. Billy Eaton, who finished Hillside the year ahead of me, was the musical director for Harry Belafonte for a number of years.
Wow, okay.
And I can't remember the name of the group she didn't go to Hillside, but Billy went to Hillside. They both finished Central. But Hillside just enjoyed a reputation of par excellence. I don't know if you've heard about Swing School.
Mr. G's Swing School. Now tell me.
And he's Miss Brown. Okay. I was the first Miss Brown from this side of town. Okay. And to this day, and I've had lots of extraordinary good things happen to me in my life. But nothing was more exciting then or now other than being Miss Brown.
Now tell me about Miss Brown, because I don't know about
this. Oh, she was the main character in Swing School.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She was the teacher. And okay. The whole theme, it was an original script developed by Mr. Geddes.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, when he retired from Hillside several years ago, I mean, I guess about 15 or 20, we put on a tribute to him at White Rock Baptist Church, including the primary scenes from Swing School, and I got to reenact Miss Brown.
Oh, how exciting. I know you had
really
a good time.
But the story of that, the theme, was Miss Brown was a young, attractive teacher,
okay,
with a classroom of incorrigibles for the most part.
Okay.
Mischievous kids, pretty much like we were at Hillside. Mm-hmm. And she knew her supervisor was going to be coming to visit the class. And what she was trying to do was make sure the children were absolutely cooperative.
Mm-hmm. Been there?
Yes. Everything she asked of them, they sort of parroted in rhythm and swing.
Okay.
Absolutely delightful. And of course, the supervisor comes in and the kids go all crazy with song, what have you. But that was the main scene of Swing School. And then there were other scenes as well, like the waltz and the other, whatever the current operetta might have been, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. But it was a coveted kind of experience, okay? Because Mr. G lived and worked in North Durham.
Okay.
And he taught music to many of the kids who grew up in North Durham. And you had to audition for the lead parts.
I heard about that.
Mm-hmm. And the auditions were quite competitive. And I don't know why I got the nerve to audition for Miss Brown, but I did.
What did you do?
I don't even remember now what I did, Sherwood. I just know I had to audition, and I got the part, and I was excited about it. And it was so funny. We used to walk home from where Hillside's located, and where it used to be, of course, the place that was torn down, mm-hmm. and then made way for Central. We'll walk up Fayetteville Street, the quarters, not really courting because we were really very young, but I can remember a couple of the teachers who taught at other schools who were family friends saying to me, well, I had no idea you could move that fast until I saw you in Swing School, because the idea was to take as long as you could to walk home from school, so we really moved slowly. But with Swing Schools, everything was in rhyme, okay, and finger popping and that kind of thing. But and people came, I think we did the performance two or three nights,
mm-hmm.
Long before Central started doing their plays for more than one night.
Mm-hmm.
And people were excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And as youngsters, elementary and junior high school kids looked forward to coming to Hillside to be in Swing School,
mm-hmm.
to be in the band.
Mm-hmm.
I think the choirs were good, but they didn't quite get the notoriety and the emphasis that the band did. Also, we had lots of young people going to, as I said, I went to the Columbia Scholastic Press Association in New York. We did not stay at the Waldorf Astoria, but the grand banquet was at the Waldorf Astoria. Wow. President Truman spoke to us.
Wow.
So we had exposure to everything that anybody else had, private students, white schools, whatever. The teachers at Hillside were absolutely committed to exposing us to whatever that was out there.
Okay.
I can't remember other kids from a lot. I know Seven Ward and from Charlotte, there were kids there. They went with us lots of times. And there was West Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
The two black high schools in Charlotte, West Charlotte and Second Ward, oftentimes had representatives. I had cousins who grew up in Raleigh at the time and went to
Ligon.
What was the school?
Ligon.
Mm-hmm. And we called them our country cousins because they just didn't keep up with the same kinds of things that Hillside was going
right.
on.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was because Well, the whole atmosphere at Durham was so progressive. Mm-hmm. This was an era when, indeed, Durham still enjoyed its Black Wall Street reputation. Mm-hmm. And also, I was about to say that I know my family knew all of my teachers, but I think whether parents and teachers were friends or not, teachers made the same level of commitment to children being exposed to great opportunities, mm-hmm. regardless of the backgrounds and neighborhoods from which they came. I think sometimes amongst the kids, there was some sense of classism in terms of what side of town you lived on or where you lived or what your parents did. Mm-hmm. But the teachers did not reinforce that.
Okay.
The message that they reinforced is, I expect you to do well.
Oh, that was the message.
That was clearly the message. And it didn't matter whether you lived on an unpaved street in an alleyway or whether your parents taught at Central.
Everyone received the same message.
Everybody, yes.
Were there other messages that they sent you?
Certainly, I think the reinforcing of a positive self-esteem was, without question, always there. When somebody expects good things of you, they're saying to you, you are somebody. Mm-hmm. I mean, long before Jesse Jackson pointed out.
Right.
And we had fun. Mm-hmm. I think one of the disadvantages, if you will, of urban growth, urban sprawl, and desegregation mm-hmm. is that the neighborhoods that were identifiably our neighborhoods were diffused.
Okay.
So that then people started going to other schools, mm-hmm. like Durham High or whatever, or moving to other neighborhoods. So there was not as much of a cohesiveness as there was when Hope and I was at Hillside.
Will you tell me a little bit more about what it was like living in Durham? Because you mentioned the class issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know a lot about that at all.
Okay.
Because what I read is that, kind of like when I read it, make it sound like Durham was a Black Wall Street and there were Black businesses and it was just Black Mecca.
Oh, yes.
And I haven't heard...
Everything on Fayetteville Street and Pettigrew Street was Black owned.
Okay.
And in fact, I guess some kids, if you lived in Hayti, if you grew up in Hayti where I did, mm-hmm. you were supposed to be somebody special.
Okay.
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 It's as simple as that. We had our own clubhouse where W.D. Hill Recreation Center now is. That was the Algonquin Clubhouse.
Oh, I've seen that.
Which was a
that.
Private country club.
Okay. And there was a tennis club, okay.
Arthur Ashe played mm-hmm. tennis here as a kid. So did Althea Gibson. We used to see her play. I had a cousin who was a tennis pro, Ernie Ingram. But these were things that you did because of where you lived and mm-hmm. who you were.
Mm-hmm.
We used to sigh with absolute anxiety that we'd have to dress up to go to the Lyceum program, to the cultural programs in North Carolina Central. I laugh because I subjected my children to the same thing when we moved back here. And my daughters didn't mind. They sort of enjoyed getting dressed. Well, I can remember we had to put on evening dresses for Philippa Schuyler's piano concerts every year because our mother's sorority sponsored it.
Okay.
And I used to think, oh my Lord, is this ever a drag? My daughters didn't seem to mind that, but mm-hmm. my son hated it with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to go? Yes, you must go. You have no choice. But the thing that was so interesting as Rick got older, how much he talked about and was pleased mm-hmm. he'd had that experience. Mm-hmm. But those were the kinds, and oftentimes we got to get autographs of the stars who came to perform.
Okay.
There were no hotel opportunities for them, so a couple of the artists stayed in our neighborhood. Mm. Across the street from me was the Movie King. Mr. F.K. Watkins owned one of the two Black theaters in town.
The Regal?
No, the Regal was the Logans. That were also family friends.
Okay.
But the Servicemen's Organization was in Mr. Watkins' house, also diagonally across.
Okay.
And that's where the other place where sometimes the stars who came to town would stay. So we were exposed to cultural events on campus and in the church and community that I thought everybody had that experience growing up until I was a college student and did it and learned, no, everybody didn't have that experience. But it was special.
What were other people, black people who didn't live in Haiti, what was that like for them? Do you have any recollection?
I think the times for the most part were good, and this sounds awful, and I'm not sure what I want this. My family had a real estate office.
Okay.
And I loved to hang out in that office. I just like people.
Mm-hmm.
I used to play sick to keep from going to nursery school just to hang out in the office. Okay.
Okay.
Ms. Scarborough, who ran the nursery school, would stop by to pick me up. And we, at that time, we lived upstairs over the office, and I could see her coming, and I would put my finger down my throat. To be too sick to go, which let me get downstairs in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And people who came in and out of there, people who were not professionally trained or educated, they worked in the factories, they worked in the laundry, seemed content.
Okay.
Seemed successful.
Okay.
I can remember feeling, why can't we? I had one girlfriend whose name was the same as mine. Her daddy worked in the factory, her mama in the laundry, and they rented from us. She had a new dress every weekend for Sunday school. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't have a new dress every weekend. But I knew we had more money than she had. Okay, but it was the values. Okay,
right.
You got new clothes for birthday, Easter, Christmas, and da 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 if you
right.
needed it.
Right.
But just it's a different value
mm-hmm.
system.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was a long time before I understood that.
Mm-hmm.
Most people walked, you know, wasn't into cars and all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. And then I can also remember that a lot of people who, again, who rented from us or who did not have quote-unquote big-time jobs drove really fancy cars.
Mm-hmm.
We always had a Chevrolet. I did not want to get my driver's license on a dumb Chevrolet. I wanted my mother to get a Cadillac. And her thing was, that Chevrolet is paid for. People with those Cadillacs, she used to call on Stryver's Row.
Uh-huh.
So there was, people were successful regardless of what their background was,
okay.
I think, because jobs were plentiful.
Okay.
Either in their own businesses or either manufacturing and textiles and tobacco. So people lived well.
How did your family get into the real estate business?
My daddy had a sense of vision.
Okay.
He finished Central.
Mm-hmm.
He was also, I guess, a very good friend of Mr. R.L. McDougall, who was president of Mechanics and Farmers Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a lot of ventures together. Daddy had a piccolo franchise, jukebox franchise.
Oh, okay.
From Durham to Winston-Salem.
Okay.
And as I said, that was way ahead of his
uh-huh.
time. He died young, unfortunately, but we have often said, or even some of the people who were successful in business after Daddy died, who ultimately became millionaires, said it had not been for Daddy's untimely death, it probably would have been us with all that money and not him. Okay. But, you know, things work out. But we were very blessed.
Yeah,
we really
like
were.
It.
My
like
mother
it.
Was a school teacher who did not, well, after I had two older sisters, and Daddy made Mother stop teaching
mm-hmm.
with the birth of the second child.
Mm-hmm.
So she was at home.
Okay.
And then when he became ill, she started going into the office
mm-hmm.
and ultimately backed her way into real estate because she really did. She was a social studies and history teacher
okay.
out in the county schools.
Mm-hmm.
She was from Granville County, from Oxford, North Carolina, and she and a whole bunch of her peers from Oxford all came to marry men in Durham
mm.
who were successful. But we were very fortunate.
It sounds like it was a wonderful time.
Look, it really was.
It sounds like it. It sounds
and,
fabulous.
And even with the separateness, we did vacation in here.
Okay.
Mother had a sister who lived in Philadelphia. My dad's sister had not yet moved to New York. But when we wanted to go places, we would just go out of town to go.
Mm-hmm.
That he took Mother to the 1939 World's Fair. Same year he died, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in 35. But, you know, people were doing
mm-hmm.
things and living well.
Sounds like they were doing big things.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
And living really well.
Well, as I said, the whole atmosphere of Durham, Mr. Pearson, whom W.G. Pearson School is named, lived two doors up from us,
okay,
where we first lived. And then when all of that was torn down, then the Pearsons ran a drugstore, the other brother. They lived next door to us at 1213. So again, we were in and out of people's homes who were about something. Mm. Absolutely about something.
Okay, well, I think I have a sense.
You know what all of where I'm coming from.
I do. I have a sense of Durham. I want to get back to and kind of education during the time period. What, besides the messages that you got from the teachers at Hillside, what was the general kind of feeling of what a good education for blacks?
Well, everybody took black history.
Okay.
I mean, there was no choice.
Okay.
That was a 10th grade requirement, mm-hmm, at Hillside, at least. Mrs. Spigner taught it for years. Her husband was, I guess, the first black chairman of the city school board, Dr. Theodore Spigner, who taught geography at, mm-hmm, Central. Your mom would know who, mm-hmm, he was.
Okay.
So we all had black history. The other thing that was very interesting, I thought, were the tradespeople, the vocations.
Okay.
Young men, women too, for that matter. There was a tailoring class. Mm-hmm. Ben Ruffin, who you know of, a, mm-hmm, recent grad, mm-hmm, a little younger than I, Ben took tailoring at Hillside.
Hmm.
Made most of his clothes.
Hmm.
And other people's. He worked with Mr. Borkins at one of his, a black-owned tailor shop on Fayetteville Street in Durham. But he took tailoring under Mr. Sissonette. I think that was his name, okay, at Hillside. But there was tailoring, there was brick masonry, there were auto mechanics, carpentry. My father-in-law and his students built all those houses on the lower end of Lawson Street behind where Hillside is. So there were, even if you were not planning to go to college, you had opportunities to develop skill and expertise at trades, mm-hmm, that people could go on and live comfortably, mm-hmm, and make a good living. The fellow who is national alumni president for Hillside, Bill Turner, was in a brick masonry class, mm-hmm, at Hillside. He, okay, went on to finish school, but came back to teach.
Oh, did
brick masonry, okay, at Hillside? Yeah.
Hmm.
But.
I'm
and
laughing.
Those classes were way ahead of most schools.
Oh, I agree.
It wasn't until integration that they eliminated a lot, mm-hmm, of that.
Well, the running joke in my family is because my mother is a very good seamstress.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't take sewing or home ec in high school.
Okay.
And I thought, well, I'll learn. Oh, sewing, no problem. Yeah. And she looked at my work and said, what is this?
Yes.
This is the skirt.
That was something else we had to do.
Right, you had to learn those things.
You took home ec.
Mm-hmm, you had to learn those things.
The lady who my home ec teacher, both of the home ec teachers at Hillside and the Tower, both good friends of my mom's and played weird bridge club members with them. And one of them made me take something apart I know 10 times. I was about to get my worst grade. And actually, the final analysis, mama helped me. It was a sunbag dress with a little bolero jacket. Mama finally helped me do that jacket because I couldn't get it right to satisfy that teacher to save my life. But you're right. Basic skills.
Mm-hmm.
We're taught.
Basic skills that my generation does not have. I cannot sew to this day.
No,
I will call my mama and say, I need this, this,
well,
and
I
this.
Had to pay and set my daughters to single. Used to have a sewing class for kids.
Okay.
But my daughters are a little older than you are.
Okay.
But I sent Susan and Gail to take that class at single because I thought, they need to know how,
mm-hmm,
to sew.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when Susan was coming home from Hampton sometimes, she had new stuff. So where'd you get this? I made it. Or I didn't know how much money we were sending her. She was sewing for other people.
Wow. Yeah.
And these were skills that we were taught. And you didn't have a choice about it. It was a requirement.
Well, now, see, I think that's something special that schools like Hillside did for students that doesn't happen anymore, and I think other schools didn't do. Do you think that there are other things that Hillside did that were really special and unique for students?
Well, I was the leadership opportunities were just in every organization, they attracted offices.
Mm.
So that, again, you learned how to preside, you learned Robert's Rules of Order, mm. You learned just a lot of things about how to take care of business, if you will, through opportunities with school extracurricular activities. students ran the concession stands for the games.
They were student run?
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
I think the student council for basketball games, we ran them. I wasn't familiar with who was what organizations were running them at football season because I was in the band and was playing with the band. But I know for during basketball season, we stopped the concession stands and we ran it.
Mm-hmm.
And the proceeds went into the activities for the student council.
Wow. That, you know that doesn't happen today.
Oh, heavens no.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Well, okay, you graduated in 1953, and Brown versus Board was in 1954.
Yes.
Do you have a recollection of your, do you have a memory of kind of when the ruling of Brown versus Board?
Well, you know, the
came
interesting in? Thing, I, in 1951, and I need to find that article, or I think I'm going to ask the Herald Sun, to the Herald Papers, to give me, find it for me. In 1951, when the plaintiffs were filing their brief, that ultimately was defended in, or was determined in Brown versus Brown in 54. I wrote a letter, well, the Durham paper, the Durham Herald, had done a feature comparing Hillside and Durham High. They had photographed Hillside from its most advantageous angles, and Durham High, which had a swimming pool, indoor pool, at that time, they covered it up when they got ready to integrate, okay? But beneath the gym in Hills in Durham High is a swimming pool.
I had no idea.
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes. Well, I think I must have been ninth grade, 51. Yes, I don't even remember what grade it was. Anyway, after they had run this newspaper spread on the two schools in the Sunday paper, I wrote a letter to the editor at the encouragement and support of my family. Because I was the only one still in school.
Okay.
Everybody in town swore my family wrote it, my sisters wrote it, or somebody wrote it other than me, but I wrote it myself. They gave me the idea and they encouraged me, because my sisters were away in college at the time. And I got more positive feedback from the black community as a result of that letter, because I did say it in the letter that no, it's still separate and it's not equal. What you have done is simply show the best part of Hillside and the worst part of Durham High. You didn't show the best part of Durham High, but if you put our best with their best, then you can see the differences. Because we were still, I remember our equipment in the labs was not the most recent equipment. Our textbooks were not the most, were not the newest. Invariably, they were the hand-me-downs from the other schools, the lab equipment was, and that kind of thing. So that we were conscious of, we were very conscious of, I think, the differences, if you will, that existed. Now, I'll let you know this. We did not let it bother us to the extent that it interfered with our level of competence.
Well, that's apparent.
Right. But, and since I was graduated, I was already in college when the ruling came down. I think basically in town, people were pleased about it.
Okay.
Because the Durham Committee on the Affairs of Black People and other folk locally had been a party to way down in the list of plaintiffs.
Okay.
So people were excited about it. Little did we know the impact, okay, the negative impact.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the negative impact?
Oh, I think the, well, first of all, the demise of identifiably black schools. There were, I guess, level one or tier one top grade high schools across the state. Hillside was just one of them, okay? Dudley and Greensboro, there were several of them. They don't even exist anymore.
Why do you think Hillside wasn't? Actually, there were there were only 13 high schools that were traditionally black in North Carolina that remained after school desegregation.
Okay.
The rest of them were turned into junior highs or elementary schools.
That's a problem. Well, again, the remember, Durham has always had a politically active black community. Although somebody was joking the other day and said, you know, they were amazed that people in Durham wanted to still call a Hillside because it was named for John Spudhill. Who was a conservative, rich white man, and they thought they would have been the first one they would have wanted to change was the name, but by then it had been Hillside so long, and it had established its reputation as a school for black folks, but It was unique. But the other thing I think that happened, that not only did the schools, the leadership changed, that in so many instances, the seasoned senior principal, who was black, became the assistant to the brand new graduate who was white. Mm-hmm. That I think racism was alive and well amongst the decision makers at that time, because the boards of education were certainly not integrated. And then I think in some instances there was what remained as a de facto segregation, that people allowed, if you will, the black supervisors to continue to run things as long as you didn't mess with them and vice versa, so that some good things were able to be sustained for a good period of time.
Do you think anything was gained?
That's a hard question. That's a hard question. I think more was, I started to say post-secondary education opened up more schools to black youngsters with integration. But I'm not even sure that was such a good thing.
Okay.
Because again, the nurturing, supportive atmosphere that I think is so important at the undergraduate level was not there in predominantly white institutions. But there were, in my awareness from my own children's experiences, there were positively influenced non-African American administrators and teachers, but they were few and far between. So I think certainly more was lost than gained as a result of integration. Or desegregation, because I don't think integration has yet to occur. My kids grew up going to either private schools or integrated schools and had lots of friends of other, of white friends. But interestingly enough, as they got to be teenagers and got to be ready to go to Hillside, and some of the white kids did go to Hillside, but the relationships changed as they reached dating age. It was really quite interesting.
So your children went to Hillside too?
We almost moved. When we got ready to build this house, they were in going, they were in high school, or going to high school. And we really, 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 really had a better deal on a house we could have bought on the other side of town. That would have meant they could not have gone to Hillside, and they had a hissy fit. We were looking at Old Farms, that's what it was. That was a neighborhood that we could have gotten more house for less money. Or not more house, but it would have been a good, it would have been a practical move, dollars and cents wise. And they said, not go to Hillside? Their dad went to Hillside, and I went to Hillside, and so I said, oh no. They were, and in fact, some of the folks, same folks that taught us were still teaching at Hillside when they were. I don't know if you've heard people talk about Prof. Austin.
I have.
We called him Prof when I was there, P-R-O-F. My kids came home calling him Prop Austin because he was so old he had to be propped up. And I got to get up correcting them one day and said, it's not Prop Austin, it's Prof. Austin. And I said, but you don't understand why he And there were others who were in there, but he was the most articulate of them because he liked to, as we used to say, play the dozens.
Okay.
He would say to the kids, I know who your mama was. But Prof. Austin was still there. And that sense of connectedness meant a lot to them.
Are there any other main people at Hillside I should know about? Because I keep hearing Mr. G Swing School, Prof. Austin, and I was hearing it two different ways, Prof. Austin and Prop Austin. And it was starting to hear those two different ways. Okay, so I'm glad you explained it to me.
My generation called him Prof.
Okay.
My children's generation called him Prop.
Okay. Are there other people or events at Hillside besides the band, Mr. G Swing School? I know the football team was outstanding.
Yeah, they won lots of awards. Field and track.
Were they good?
Okay. They were good. Even before Jeremy Striders and all of that, that some of the guys who are leaders in that effort ran track at Hillside under, okay. Oh, Mr. Easterlin, who's since dead. Mm-hmm. And then, I can't call the other man's name who was coach, but a smooth talk. He was a minister as well. He had a radio program, smooth talking voice. That everybody adored him. What was his name? I can't remember his name right now. But there was everything about Hillside back in the era when I was there. Mm-hmm. Earned recognition of top order. And of course, you've seen some of Ernie Bonds' work with the band. And Ernie, of course, was a Hillside mm-hmm. graduate, played football, and started his artwork even then.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think people in my generation or future generations should learn about the legacy of Hillside?
The absolute sense, the embracing, if you will, how the older generation, the leadership of the educational system, embraced the young people. They cared about them. And they made it known to the youngsters as well as to the youngsters' parents that they were important to them.
How did they do that specifically?
Well, a long time ago, they used to have to make home visits.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That was one of the other main things that was lost with desegregation.
Okay.
That a teacher got her list the week before school opened, or she had her roster, she knew who her students mm-hmm. were, and she visited them.
Okay.
So the teachers eyeballed the parents and the students and vice versa. When integration occurred, the young white teachers did not want to go into black communities. Mm-hmm. So okay. they cut that out.
Okay.
And particularly for kids whose parents had not had a positive educational experience, mm-hmm. they are conveying this negative attitude towards school. And if you don't know, they don't live in the same community anymore, they don't mm-hmm. go to the same church anymore, how do you form a relationship? Right. And when everybody shows up at school at the same time for orientation, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. Only the very assertive ones make that connection. Mm-hmm. If I were in charge, that would be one of the first things I would do. And Kay will probably tell you, we supervised residents in psychiatry from Duke at Lincoln through the years. And the first, usually I had two or three residents each year. And the first thing I would do, I would not allow them to touch, look at it for a real patient. I'd make them go on a home visit mm-hmm. with one of our paraprofessionals mm-hmm. so they could see the communities they were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're over there in an ivory tower, you don't know anything about public housing.
Right.
I never will forget one young man said to me, this patient was paranoid. And I said, well, why do you say that? He says, well, she said she's crawling around at night ducking gunshots and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I said, what's her address? Where does she live? He had pulled her records from see. I said, that's not paranoia. That's real. And at that address, there are probably bullets whizzing around in her neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So that, again, to have some sense of who you're serving and where they're coming from, I think makes a big difference mm-hmm. in any profession's ability to relate to them.
Any other lessons we should learn from the legacy of Hillside?
How we're going to get parents to recommit themselves. But again, I think the outreach has to come from the school, administrators and what have you. But the other thing, I can remember parents being at the school, mm-hmm. not to chastise teachers or students, but being there to assist. Mm-hmm. And these don't much, people weren't being asked to get money, mm-hmm. but just some time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think somewhere or another along the way, it got lost to the point that people thought if you go to the school to do things, you're supposed to be able to bring money.
Mm. You're right.
And people who couldn't bring money stayed away.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember when my kids left private school and went to public school. Fortunately, my job situation was always such that I could kind of take my lunch out when I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. And I would go in and out of schools and was just amazed at how few black parents would show up. Mm-hmm. For programs, for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was unheard of. If I had two words to say in a program at school, my mama was sitting there in the audience and I could look out and see, that's my mama, you know you're supposed to do good.
Right.
And did the same thing for my children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had something to say, or not, if they were just up on the stage, you just go to say, hey, I'm rooting for you. Right. And that kind of, that's one of the legacies, if you will, from long ago that we don't have anymore. And it's not encouraged now. Mm-hmm. There was the big to-do not too long ago with a parent who showed up at one of the schools and didn't stop at the office to get her.
That's right, her visitor's
pass. Her visitor's pass. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I guess people are angry now. People weapons yourself, I don't know. But it was all a negative thrust rather than a positive.
Right. Right.
And that's scary.
It is scary. I've asked everything I want to ask, but I'm afraid that there was more I could have gotten that I didn't know to ask. So I'm going to ask this question.
Okay.
Is there anything more I should know about Hillside to make sure that the story is told accurately, from your perspective at least?
I think the other thing that maybe we didn't touch on is that kids were there because they wanted to be there. There was a truant officer, but I think by the time kids got to Hillside, they didn't miss school. They were there. You know, because there was something there for everybody. As I said earlier, there was a sense of acceptance, a sense of belonging. I can remember very quietly in some instances where there were hardships in families, teachers, and maybe parents as well, assisted. I can remember one fella who was a class ahead of me who came from a big family, bright fella. He must have had simply one pair of trousers and one decent sweater to his name. Was always immaculate. And I can remember he was on the safety patrol with me and in the student council with me. I can remember hearing some of the teachers, because I was nosy. I wasn't supposed to hear it, but I was hearing it. I remember hearing some of the teachers, both of whom happened to be my mother's friends, getting things together for him. Because he traveled with us, he did things, and rather than have him feel out of place and not as dressed as nicely as everybody, and it wasn't any big to do about it, nobody was poking fun at anything, because he was always a man, bright as smart as he could be. I think he ended up with a full scholarship to Morehouse, and I've lost track of him now. But I think that sense of support to people was the other thing that was there that we've lost.
And so your message to schools now, things they could do better to help educate black kids, would be what?
Let them know you care about them. Keep your arms around them. I've gotten involved recently with New Horizons, the school for kids that have been put out, and I've been so impressed with how motivated those kids are over there at New Horizons. Marlena Dunford, they call her coach, has done a tremendous job. I've gone over and spoken to them and done a number of things. And again, I think if you can chip through the armor that kids naturally put on themselves, and that's a part of developmental milestone, is to distance yourself from authority or whatever, especially if you feel yourself not having what you think you ought to have. And if we could push that aside and relate to the person instead of the exterior or the superficial, we could go a long way with improving education.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This was fun.